So yeah, so you also had a, you know, it sounds like an injury. You got to that level, and I assume you were working your way and hoping to get to the NHL, and then you had an injury. So why don't we start? Why don't you tell us a little bit about your story and kind of work up to that moment, what you've been doing since, and now what you're doing with CBD and whatnot moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. So I grew up in the Boston area, played hockey my whole life. And when you grow up in Boston playing hockey, I think you either want to play at Boston College or play at Boston University. Not both of them. So I was lucky playing at BC was my childhood dream growing up. And if you're not familiar with college hockey or hockey in the Boston area, there's the Beanpot, which is a big tournament between all the Boston schools. It's just kind of a big deal. And hockey obviously is a really big East Coast sport. So I was fortunate and lucky to realize that dream and had an awesome 4 years there. And then again, I'm a proud BC alum. So I would say BC hockey is like the Alabama of football for college hockey. And Coach York, he's the all-time winningest college hockey coach, both active and all-time. He's in the Hockey Hall of Fame. It's just a really, really big program. And I was fortunate to play on a handful of teams. We won the national championship my sophomore, senior year. We lost right at the end to Michigan State my freshman year. So just lucky to have a great 4 years there. And then after I played in the minors with the Devils and Penguins, and I had a really bad concussion my last year playing, which just forced me to think about life after hockey a little bit sooner than I was anticipating. And I think like a lot of athletes can relate to that. At some point when you stop, it's kind of this like, what the hell do I do now moment. And I think one of the things, and I was lucky just like with my parents have always just encouraged me just like chase things that I'm passionate about, chase big goals, big dreams. And I kind of just always pursued that. And it kind of led me down an entrepreneurial path. And my co-founder with Beam, which is the business I had launched about 3 years ago now, my co-founder, Kevin, very similar story, played baseball at BC, got drafted pretty high by the White Sox. Same thing, played professionally, had a bunch of injuries, forced out of baseball sooner than later. And then we're similar natures and wired pretty much the same way. And we ended up reconnecting a handful of years later. And we're training for a marathon together at the time and just became really passionate about the CBD space and what was going on and seeing a really big opportunity to do some different stuff. And I guess just to backtrack though, just I think being athletes, both of us, speaking for both of us, we've always just been really competitive. We always just focus on things that we're passionate about and kind of approach everything the same way that we did as we were athletes. So,
yeah. Well, so yeah, and let's pause there for a second because I know there's more to talk about, but I want to pause on like the whole, you know, you basically ran into a roadblock with your career. And you know, it's how this happens, you know, you happen to be a hockey player, but this happens in everybody's life, right? Like you get to a point where something stops you, whether it's an injury or you realize this isn't for me and you've got to pivot. And that's when the rubber meets the road in life. And that is the difference between what I like to call, I've said many times before on this show, a growth owner versus a fixed victim, right? The growth owner says, all right, that kind of sucks, but I've got everything within me to pivot and to do something else. And, you know, you stepped back, sounds like, and took a 10K view of your life and evaluated kind of, you know, what it is that you wanted to do and what your strengths were. And if hockey wasn't an option anymore, you know, instead of the fixed victim and you crying and, you know, gaining 100 pounds, eating Cheetos on the couch, you know, feeling sorry for yourself, you went out and pivoted. So kudos for that. I love to hear those types of stories. And unfortunately, especially I think in the athletic world, there's a lot of, let me know if you would agree with this, you know, people that get to that elite level and, you know, there's a career ending, something happens where they can't play anymore, or their just career comes to an end naturally. And they haven't really developed that growth owner mindset, and it's like devastating to them. Yeah. And their life just kind of goes into a downward spiral, you know, whether it's gaining weight, alcoholism, drugs, you know, whatever it is. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. And a couple of thoughts I've had, and I've had a chance, you know, I've had that conversation with a lot of my friends that played hockey. I've had friends that, you know, we're doing really well in the NFL and their careers came to an end through different injuries or just not really making it after a number of years, baseball, all different sports. And it's interesting. I've heard a lot of people say, you know, I'm just, they kind of accept that they think like they'll never be as passionate about something else. Sports will always be the thing they're most passionate about. And I think I always just looked at it as like, I didn't think that was necessarily true. I think one thing, you know, when I first stopped playing and I've had this conversation with a lot of my friends. Like when you first stop, it's almost you can even say you go through almost like a cycle of depression. It's like your life changes very drastically. And you go from being super passionate about something to then not knowing what you're going to do next and thinking about, you know, what the heck do I do? And I think one thing that I realized that helped me was what I was really pursuing with hockey wasn't so much, you know, putting the jersey on, lacing up my skates and going on the ice. There was a lot of the attributes of the game that I loved. And obviously it was doing something that I enjoyed and was learning and growing and evolving in. But I think ultimately I looked at it as I saw hockey as a way to, you know, live life on my terms. It provided a lot of opportunities, allowed me to do what I wanted. You can create financial success. You can create, you know, opportunities to, for me, I always, you know, try and loved and inspire other people with my story, my journey. And so when I realized that hockey was just a strategy that I was at the time going down, trying to achieve essentially just, you know, freedom and just living a life that I wanted, creating the life that I wanted, I soon quickly realized that, you know, being an entrepreneur could definitely allow me those same things if I did that well. And so once I kind of wrapped my mind around that, it's like, okay, it's not so much just like hockey. I wasn't obsessed with hockey. I was more obsessed with the process of it, the journey of it, the fulfillment of it. And I can do that through other channels. And that helped me kind of overcome that. And then I think too, just like a mindset, like the future will always be better than the past. I never thought that my best, you know, my glory days, the good old days, I love my time at BC. I love my time playing pro hockey. But I never looked at it as like, that'll be the best period of my life. I've always just had a conviction, like there's so much more left, like even way more years in my life. I only spent playing hockey, you know, until I was 23, 24, 25, however old
God,
I was.
And, yeah. I mean, that's, I graduated, you know, that's, a lot of kids are just graduating from college. That's the, yeah. I mean, you're basically at the start of your life there.
Yeah. And I think just having that mindset that, there's more exciting stuff ahead than what I had in hockey. I think just being optimistic about that is, I think, and knowing, and it's a growth mindset, like you said too. It's just believing that there's more ahead. I can continue to evolve and do great things.
Okay, so let's talk about, so what is to, and here we are now. What, 10 years later? How many years later are we?
Yeah,
10. Okay, so what has this last 10 years looked like? And you know, in telling us that. Remember, this show is about habits, and you know, at the end, I'm going to put you on the spot. I'll give you a fair warning, and I'll ask you what's the biggest failure habit that you maybe once had. I call them failure versus success habits. A lot of people call them bad versus good habits, but at the end of the day, the habit that you maybe once had that was holding you back and crushing your momentum that you were able to overcome and replace with what you now consider a success habit.
Yeah,
that you're, you know, building momentum with. And so, I mean, why don't you kind of tell us about your journey and as you do, be thinking, you know, are there any habits that you were able to develop along the way that have helped you to get to where you are now?
I mean, gosh, I just reflect on the last 10 years. I think just talking present day with Beam, I think, you know, sometimes like our friends and people close to us are just looking at the business more objectively from a 100,000 foot view, just like, oh, you guys are killing it. Like, must be nice. Or, you know, of course it's going well. Like it's CBD, like it was a booming industry. And, you know, Kevin and I often look at it and just kind of say, like, it took us 10 years to kind of be able to do what we're doing now. It didn't just happen the last 3 years or it didn't just happen the last 12 months.
Thank you for saying that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I guess what I've been doing the last decade is trying, failing, and trying again on repeat. So I stopped, just a quick timeline. I stopped playing hockey. At the time, I didn't know what the hell I wanted to do. And a lot of my friends either got into finance or commercial real estate. So I wound up at a mutual fund company in Boston. I was there for about 7 months, realized like it didn't seem like there was anything exciting me to pursue. I had also started coaching at a varsity high school in Boston called Dexter, and they're in it was an elite high school program, so they had a lot of good players, and so I was an assistant coach there, and through that, I became so passionate about wanting to coach and mentor these young guys, and so I left the finance company and just was coaching, and then I had just stopped playing hockey, so to them, I was cool at the time, and you know, they're asking me to work with them after practice. They start asking me what they should do for training. And my dad was an entrepreneur, so I think it's probably just in my blood. And I just started thinking about, you know, all these kids are on their phones. It would be cool to like interact and coach them more using their phone, using to be more productive than just social media. And so long story short on that, I had the perfect hockey basement. I was living with my parents at the time. Half of it, it was all tile floors. So you could shoot pucks and stick handle, work on your skills. The other side was the gym, everything you'd need to train and work out. And so I had these two brothers, they'd pop down after school. We'd work out, we'd train. I had everything set up in Google Docs. And then all of a sudden there's like 100 kids in this program. And the whole thing is kind of more like teaching and mentoring them through the program. I didn't want to be a trainer. It was more focused on like, how do I impact these young guys? And that just led me down a few different things. We kind of ended up taking this idea of this sort of like coaching app. And then I partnered with these two older guys and we started selling it. You know, BC Hockey used it, Harvard used it. It became sort of like an operating system for both like managing coaching and data and communications, and we're selling it to the Bruins, the Celtics, you know, Notre Dame teams, like really elite college. It was really cool. And then that ended up not working out. I ended up having a horrible partnership ultimately and decided to leave that, but that was hard. So that was kind of in my mind, sort of like a failure. And then this is where my story, I guess, gets kind of interesting. I used to be engaged. And so then I had the idea to start a business with my ex-fiance, and she was a gymnast. And we both had a passion for inspiring young athletes. And so we kind of took what I was doing with those the kids at the time and kind of brought that into gymnastics. And then long story short there is that relationship was sort of coming to an end. So did the business. And so, you know, I spent another 3 years doing that, learned a lot, but that was another failure. And then right as I was getting out of that engagement, Kev and I were just like, do we want to do this? And it's just like, I guess I'll do this. I'll try for a third time. And kind of an interesting part of that story is I sold my engagement ring, used that as my half of starting being with Kevin. And luckily, Kevin and I have a pretty rock solid relationship, friendship, partnership.
But who you choose as your partner is huge.
That's
huge.
One lesson I've learned, I would say, the hard way through my last couple of ventures and ideas. But anyways, I mean, back to your original question, I mean, those last, you know, 8 years leading up to Beam, I would say, or 7 years, whatever, like they were painful. That was not roller coaster, sunshine and balloons. Those were, like I said, learning, failing, learning, trying again. And so really through all of that, but like, I don't know that we'd be where we are. And Kevin had somewhat of a similar background, just like post-baseball. I don't know that we'd be able to be where we are today had we not gone through the challenges through sports, other stuff, and then into Beam. So it's been a decade or so in the making, I would say.
Well, so right, and tying this into, you know, the game of life, gamifying your life, you know, the way I look at life, it's a series of levels, right? And we all start on the same level, and it's your ability to learn and enact the rules, or these, you know, I call them these universal principles that are all around us that have been around since the beginning of time. They're going to be around until we destroy ourselves, and to ignore them is to, you know, not be able to advance to that next level. And, you know, when you get these obstacles, these defeats, these failures, it's your ability to, okay, what did I learn from it? How can I pivot and make sure that I keep going, building momentum, getting up to those, you know, those levels to come. And sounds like, you know, right, you learn, and you're going to learn. As soon as you started talking, you said something that I got excited about, which was, you know, people, they see my success with CBD and they go, oh, well, yeah, you know, he's lucky he got in at the right time. But it's been a 10-year journey. I mean, I've literally said almost that exact same sentence, but with my company was restaurant delivery. It was a company called Doorstep Delivery. We started about 12 years ago, the year the iPhone came out. I mean, at that time, it's hard to remember back to the time when this was the case, but only about 12 years ago, if you wanted to order food, you had two options, pizza and Chinese, and you were calling in it. Right. Yeah. And so I, you know, the previous business I was in, we were stuck in an office for 12 hours at a time. And I was like, there's gotta be a better solution. Like I want to eat healthy. Like I was working out, I was trying to build these areas of my life and be, you know, be the guy I wanted to be. And it made it very hard. The friction was increased, as I would say, by not having an option to have good food. And I'm not a cook. I didn't like to make my own food. I'm like, there's nothing out there. So we created our own business, Doorstep Delivery. And it was like, okay, now you can get, and the iPhone had just come out. And I'm like, wait a second, people can, instead of calling, they can use their phone to place their order. And then that shoots directly to us. And then we can send that to the driver so he knows where to go. And it was like, holy shnikey. So we developed our own software. And I mean, this was a 10-year journey, similar to yours. You know, we did end up fortunately building it up and exiting in 2019. And God, if I had a dollar for every time somebody stopped me on the street and were like, you're the Doorstep Delivery guy, I had that idea. Man, you're lucky. And it's like, wow. Like, and that's just goes to show that that's how the human brain, the default works, and that we just assume it's easy for other people. and that people, when we see them successful, like it just happened overnight. And, but here's the trick. The key is like I was saying with levels in life, even if you are like, there are some people that get lucky. Like, okay, let's say you make a video on TikTok and all of a sudden you've got 10 million followers, right? It just blows up and you're this huge, huge influencer. If you jump from level one to level 30, you're going to have problems, right? Because now you've got to maintain that. And you may not have had to put in the work and the effort and learned what it was to be able to get that. You know, you may have struck magic once, but can you do it again? Mm-hmm. Right. And so that's why it's similar to like that show, The Lottery Ruined My Life. You know, when people just get $20 million handed to them and have no idea how to handle that money, you mm-hmm. know, what it means to use that to grow and actually be happy with it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden they've given it away to Uncle Larry and all these people asking, and they're buying drugs and they're getting fat and they're, you know, and before you know it, they're broke. And I mean, it's amazing. Yeah. That show, I've only seen a couple episodes, but the theme is basically like 90-some% of lottery winners end up like broke and or dead. Right. I mean, it's just like, yeah. It boggles my mind. And that just ties into what we're saying here, which is like, you got to earn it. Like mm-hmm. you got to put in the work, you got to have the failures, and you got to learn from your mistakes and what it takes to actually get there. And then when you do get there, then you're ready. Mm-hmm. Right. And you're equipped.
Yeah. I totally agree. It's funny. One thing that popped in my mind was just, we talk a lot about it when we're interviewing, hiring. But just kind of what you said, like I had that idea. And one thought that I've had and thing that I believe is like risk and reward go hand in hand. And a lot of people, I think that they want those things, or they, you know, whether it be, you know, joining our team, you know, they want the fast paced nature of startups. They want the chaos. They want the autonomy. They want, you know, the potential upsides and rewards that can come financially from it. And sometimes you just find like, they really don't want those things. They think they do, but when they see actually what it's like in reality, they don't. And so it's hard. You really have to understand like the risk and reward come hand in hand. Like you have to understand, like we can crash and burn in this, and there's a lot of challenges and it's really, really hard. So you really have to embrace the idea that like, if you want all the rewards that come from those things, like you really have to be able to embrace and take on the risks that are associated with it. And I think sometimes that's where people don't understand the correlation of that. You know, sometimes they just want the rewards, but aren't really willing to take on.
Well, the risks and the hard work, right? Those are the two, right? I mean, you got to put your neck out there, but if you don't do the hard work, it's just like, if anybody that's read any success book, that's studied people that are successful, it's amazing to me that this isn't hardwired DNA into us from an early age, because it does go against our. I'm taking this course from Yale. It's called the Science of Well-Being. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. It has all these studies, and they call it miswanting. And our brain is constantly misleading us, right? We have these biological ways that our brain works, going back, dating back to Paleolithic times, when it made sense to be greedy because it meant survival and to do certain things certain ways, but they don't mesh with today's society and the way that we, you know, live our lives now. And it makes us less happy when we have these miswanting things, such as one of the biggest ones is, if only I could become rich enough, it'll solve all my problems and I'll be happy and I'll sit on a beach drinking a pina colada for the rest of my life. Woohoo. Like, it doesn't work that way. So even if you get that, like just like the lottery ruined my life, that doesn't solve your problems. Like money is, it is a piece of it. You know, I've got these five core areas I talk about, and you've got, you know, career and finances is one of those cores, but it's how are you making that money? What are you doing with that money? Like, what is the job that you're actually doing every day? Do you love it? Do you wake up like, yeah, let's go? I mean, it's going to be tough days, of course, but in general, kind of, are you in flow state a lot? I was just reading about this about flow state. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but the gist is, you know, whatever you do in life, you want to get into a state where like time just flies by and things just, and it's like kind of where you meet your skill level with difficulty, and you want to kind of meet, like, it's a high level of difficulty and you have a high level of skill and you get into that flow state and there's just nothing like it. Right. And so to me, that's kind of the goal, and that's what people, you know, should aspire towards and work towards. But people get caught up in the money thing. It's like, well, it doesn't matter what I'm doing. It doesn't matter if I'm screwing over people, if I hate what I do, if I'm working long hours and never seeing my family, but I'm making a lot of money. It's like, okay, so what is that actually doing for you? And in the same course I'm taking, it shows literally studies that are proven there without a doubt that money, we think it's going to make us a lot happier, but then when we get it, it has this like little jolt. Just like when I sold my company, this was all proven. I I knew it was coming, and sure enough, it felt amazing. There's no doubt. 10 years of work, I sold my company, I got a paycheck to have, you know, money for the rest of my life, and I didn't have to technically work anymore. Mm-hmm. For 2 weeks, I just was like, oh, it was like an anchor lifted up. But then it was like, okay, now what? Mm-hmm. What's next? Like, I can't just sit around and do nothing, right? And people just, they don't get that. And they just focus on the money side. And unfortunately, they end up spinning their wheels. And by the end of their life, if they haven't gotten there, they've wasted their time trying to get there. And even if they do, a lot of people get there and they think, well, wait, now I need more. Okay, so now I've got 5 million. Well, now 10, but I don't feel satisfied like I thought I would. It must be 10 million. Right. And then they're just constantly chasing.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just, we were talking about earlier, I think having a belief of just like being optimistic about the future. And there's always, even after you have a big exit, you make a lot of money and you're financially free. Sounds like you still had ideas and belief, like there's still more exciting things to do out there, that the best wasn't behind you. Like that wasn't your big score. And now you just kind of, you know, coast on things. And I learned it through hockey. And I think I always say sports is like the ultimate metaphor for life. I'm starting to think that a startup is also the ultimate metaphor for life. And you learn so many valuable things that correlate to relationships and life in general and things like that. But I just have a deep belief, like you focus on the process and the results come. We learned that at BC, again, like being on successful teams that won national championships and then being on teams that lost in the final few minutes and being on a team that didn't make playoffs. Like if we didn't win a championship at BC, it was, you know, ultimately a failure. And I think one of the biggest things that got ingrained in my brain was we just focused on the process every day, showing up to practice, getting better every day, small goals, you know, increments, not just constantly focusing on the end result of winning a trophy. And within Beam, you know, we are a startup. You know, we do have aspirations at some point to potentially be acquired and things like that. But if we solely focus on that and solely focus on money, we'll make really stupid decisions and act and behave differently if we're just chasing that versus building a great culture, building a great team, building great products that help people, building a great sustainable business that runs efficiently and all the unit economics are healthy. You know, when you focus on those things, I think that's where you find flow state. You don't really think about, you know, these other things. Like you're just in the moment, you're present. And it's just flowing, like you said. And that's one thing.
And that's when you're going to produce the best results, because you're so into it. And like, an obstacle that might come in your way, you're like, okay, so what? Like, I know that I can do this, right?
Yeah. We give everybody in the team the obstacles the way. I mean, I think that's always just, we talk about that. I mean, again, like even going back earlier, when he's talking about like, you know, it looks big and exciting from the outside, but it is so freaking hard from when we launched Beam even to today. Like, there's just, it's not easy. You have to be passionate about what you do, because we have learned, like, you quit. Like, why would you want to put yourself through something so stressful and chaotic and hard emotionally, physically, mentally, if you didn't love it, then, you know, you just quit on it. So, it's just, I mean, all these things intertwine,
right?
They're all connected to,
That's right. Yeah. And let me just backing up what you were just saying and just make sure this point is crystal clear, 'cause it's super important. If you don't love what you're doing, like talk about that friction I was mentioning earlier, like life becomes so much harder. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of like we were saying, like, what are you doing it for? Like, are you doing it just to make money, or are you doing it because, like, the question to ask yourself is, would you do this? This is probably the easiest way to look at it. Would you still do this if you didn't get paid money, right? Meaning, like, you enjoy it and you'd want to do it anyways. That's what's going to allow you to keep going, because you are going to get bitch slapped, as you've seen over the last 10 years. And I saw in my business over and over, you are going to run into wall after wall. And I mean, it becomes incrementally so much harder if you're not loving what you're doing to just be like, screw this. Right. Yeah. And then you got to start all over. So you need to get that in the beginning. And I always like to say, if you can combine your passions with your strengths, you know, and so many people, you ask people what their strengths are, this is their first response. I mean, it's like, what? Like, how old are you? Like, this is, your strengths are everything. Like, you got to go all in on your strengths. Like, that's what you naturally have an ability over other people. Like, why are you focusing on something that you're not good at, or because you want to keep up with the Joneses, or you want to be that guy, but that's not something within you. You're just going to be at best a decent mimic of that person, right? You got to go all in on your strengths and tie those to your passions, and then just never look back.
Yeah, I think that's well said.
So speaking of that, what's next? So tell us more about, the business itself and where you're headed.
Yeah. So we're just, end of this year will be the end of our third full year business. With Beam, so we got into the CBD category, but we always kind of looked at it. We don't really consider ourselves a CBD company. I think we saw an opportunity to sort of like start and build roots there, but then leverage that to then build a broader, bigger wellness brand. So when we launched, we just had a CBD tincture, which is just a single point solution of a CBD supplement, essentially, and a topical. But we quickly, through building a brand and looking at, we really wanted to live in this whole intersection of athletics and people living active lifestyles. We just saw, like, with CBD in particular, there's a ton of interest and excitement around it. But, with the brands and the products and how new it was, nobody really trusted what was out there. And, the stuff you'd see stuff at gas stations, like, I would never put that in my body. Or you'd see stuff that looks like it would get you high, and people didn't really understand the difference between CBD and THC. And the more we understood it, the more we researched it, the more we looked at the market, stuff that we were passionate about, we just saw over time to, like, we think CBD will just be a great ingredient, just the way adaptogens and vitamins and minerals and nootropics and things like that are great ingredients. And we more focused on, whether athlete or just living a healthy lifestyle, like, what are the core benefits that people need? What are their need states? What pain points do the people really have? And, things just around sleep and focus and energy, recovery, hydration, we just really zeroed in, like, what are the core things? Again, like, whether, Baker Mayfield, a quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, is an investor, Venus Williams is an investor in Beam. We just looked at that and said, those elite athletes to just, Kevin and I now, and, people on our team, or you just like living healthy, active lifestyle, like, what pain points there's like the common thread between these groups of people. And it's really simple, but then we just said, how do we make a great product out of that? And on the foundation of super high quality, you can trust, great brand, we've built out a great portfolio of products, is just to keep leaning into that and understanding. I think one of Beam's strengths, I think, is understanding what are those things that people really need? And maybe they're not, as blatantly saying that or realizing it, but what are the needs that people have just in their own health journeys? And I think we've done a really good job of creating products that are uniquely stacked with different ingredients to promote those function benefits, and taking that, because sometimes that can be really technical and scientific and hard to understand, but then taking that and also pairing it, like, communicating really easily to customers so they can quickly get what this is.
Yeah, know all the, I think that's a key. CBD is like a mystery to me.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about it. I'd like to understand, like, just give me like your elevator pitch on why CBD is such a great.
Yeah. Quick CBD 101. Yeah. So you have, just start really high level and make it quick, but you have the cannabis family of plants, and I'll use just really simple ways to explain it. So you have hemp and you have marijuana, and both of those plants, you have a bunch of cannabinoids, and essentially, they're just particles of these plants, and CBD is one and THC is another. CBD is more commonly found in hemp, and then THC is more commonly found in marijuana. THC obviously is the one that has a psychoactive component, the thing that gives you the high feeling. CBD doesn't have that. And so what's interesting is all of our products come from hemp. We remove all the THC, but CBD, think in our body, we have what's called an endocannabinoid system. So it's almost like this highway of communication. It's like our brain communicating to our body on how to function and maintain balance to make sure, like, our digestive system, how we deal with stress, inflammation, aches and pains, the process we use to go to sleep, like, make sure that it's running optimally or running in balance, or essentially keeping our body in homeostasis. And what's really interesting is that CBD, so through all of that in life, our stress, we're working, our diet can be off. Life just puts us out of balance at times. I'm sure we have all felt that or probably currently feeling that now. CBD acts as like little repairmen. So just think of, you have this communication highway of, transmitters and everything, your brain telling your body what to do. That gets broken down and frayed a little bit. CBD almost goes in and fix all the potholes and the bumps and the cracks so that our brain is just keeping our body in balance and able to do its job more efficiently. So what's interesting about CBD is it's helping our endocannabinoid system do its job more efficiently, which is then impacting so many benefits. So I think a lot of times people are like, how does CBD help us so many different things? It sounds like snake oil. It's not necessarily like a sleep aid. It's not inflammation aid. It is, but it's doing it indirectly by helping our body just be in balance.
That's a good explanation.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it helps our body go to sleep, not because it acts as something that makes you really fatigued or tired. It's just helping your body go through the process it's supposed to do to get into REM and deep cycle. And same thing, managing stress or inflammation, digestion, things like that. So it's like this little, like, multi-purpose ingredient that can help boost a bunch of different functions in your body.
Matt is conscious, has had some comments. I like, helps you be happy, which helps balance your nervous system. Yeah, I like that. Right. I mean, anything that's right. It sounds like there more studies need to be done, right? Like, but yep. At the end of the day, we know, I mean, it's been proven, like it's got positive benefits and it sounds like it can help with the whole array of symptoms that people might have. And maybe mm-hmm. some people use it for one thing. Some people use it for another. Other people look at it as a more holistic, like I'm just going to use it to, as Matt's saying, be happy, help me be feel better and be happy, which will, you know, trickle over to everything else in my life. Because a happy person, that's another thing I'm learning in the science of wellness course. It's pretty cool. Like when you look at the correlation of happiness to your health mm-hmm. And just your mindset, I mean, holy cow. I mean, I remember growing up hearing that, like that old, you know, I'm sure we've all heard the, you know, he died of a broken heart. Like the wife dies and then the husband dies not long after. You know, I mean, there's no doubt that the mind and the body are connected, and that if yeah, we're not happy, we don't have a reason to live and to be growing and to be moving forward in life, that might as well not be here. And our body goes, all right, let's go.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's why, you know, always just believing the future would be better than the past, having that optimistic outlook on stuff.
Yeah. Mindset's everything. That growth owner versus fixed victim. Everything. Yeah. Because when you got that going for you, everything else just kind of falls into place. Mm-hmm. So thank you for explaining that. And tell us where we can find, I'm going to ask you that final question I told you I was earlier. I gave you a heads up.
Yeah.
Tell us where we can find your products.
Yeah, so we're all direct to, all online, all e-com. So beamorganics.com is our website. And then just at Beam on Instagram, just BEAM. And we have a limited edition sleep powder right now. We have our sleep product called Dream. So it's like a yummy hot chocolate. It has CBD, melatonin, reishi, L-theanine, magnesium in it.
Dude, wait a minute.
Yeah, and then we have this white.
You should have started the program with that. I'm all in on that.
Well, usually stuff you say in the beginning, people might not remember at the end. So we'll end on
that. No, I'm kidding. Yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to get some of that.
It's been super popular. We have a whole bunch of things from hydration, things to help with focus, recovery, inflammation, stress. And you can find all that on our website.
Love it, man. Okay. Ready for your final question?
Hit me.
All right. So what is the biggest failure habit that you feel you once had that you have now replaced with what you would consider a success habit? And I'm going to throw a little loop in, because now we're really focusing on the gamification theme of your life and how to reduce friction. Is there something that allowed you to develop that success habit, that allowed you to reduce the friction to do that? And if you don't understand that, you can answer the first part and I'll address it and we can answer it.
Yeah, maybe we can break those into different things.
Okay.
I think the first thing that comes to mind, I think the interesting part, I think it was something I wasn't really aware of. And then I learned to be more conscious of it. Once I became more conscious of it, then I was able to change it. But I think, you know, from stopping, you know, with hockey ending and trying to figure out life, and then, you know, having a few failed startups, I don't know that I was like totally conscious and aware of my thinking and my thoughts, and sort of this idea of like asking like, why me? Why is this happening again? I can't believe this is like, you know, another thing I tried and I think failed. I think understanding just like the power of questions, and it kind of goes both ways. Like if you're asking yourself negative questions, you know, why is this happening? Or I think you'll find a lot of negative answers to it. And again, when I was younger in my career, in my life, I didn't realize how much I was probably doing that subconsciously. And then once I became more aware of how much I could redirect my mind and my thinking with a good question, I would just say for me personally, I think that just became like a game changer. And also even just leveraging that, like with our team at Beam, knowing how to ask really good questions of the team and getting them to think about things differently. And I think that became a really bad habit, just letting my mind run amok and ask really stupid questions. And I found really dumb answers to go along with them. And then once I realized that, knowing to ask the better questions and guiding myself towards finding better answers to help me in tough situations, that's been a big, big change.
Nice. Okay. That's a good one. Yeah. Right. It's like the teacher saying, you know, are you just asking a question to hear yourself talk? And I think when we're younger and we're still learning, you know, and I think in general, asking questions is always a good thing, but right, taking a moment to think about it and what am I really like, what's my end goal here? Like, what am I trying to get out of this? What am I trying to learn? Mm-hmm. Not only will you, but the question answerer will get much more, you'll get a better answer from them. Okay. And then, so the gamification part, it gets a little tricky, but you know, gamification, like I said, the way I look at it is it's ways that you are able to sort of hack your brain, trick your brain into taking these actions that are good for you. So in getting to this point where, you know, you have pivoted from point A to point B, is there something that you use to help you do that? You know, is there like a trigger or something that kind of like, okay, this reminds me to do it, or a reminder that you put in your phone, or did it just naturally occur over time?
I think one of the things that has helped us, you know, I can even just remember like when we were launching Beam, it was just like, okay, what are the things that we actually just need to do? And just list out all the steps and just focus on those things. I think at times people can think, you know, you have an end goal and you just think of that and it just feels unconquerable. It feels way too big to even start somewhere because it's just how the heck would I ever get there? It's just such a big goal. I think one thing I've done and we've done a lot at Beam, or even me just personally, is just having a strong bias towards taking massive action on stuff. And a way I guess I would gamify it is just understand like what either the big term or the short term or medium sized goal would be, and just list out a bunch of action steps. Like, what are the things that I can do that just inch me towards that?
And okay. So
then the smart piece to that is like, just go start doing stuff and then look at the results that you're getting, and the ones that don't work, chuck them aside, and the ones that are working, lean into them, and then just come up with new things, new strategies. And through that process of just take action, look at the results, lean into it or pivot, has been a way just like, one, just take it like brick by brick, and then also just be really focused in making progress and just taking action on stuff. And it kind of comes like a way to gamify. You can, you know, I've done it where I just, you know, either whiteboard it or draw in a notebook, which is just like, here's what I want to get done. Here's the 10 things I think that'll move me towards that. These two worked, these eight didn't. I'll focus on these two and I'll come up with five new strategies. It kind of is a way to gamify. I've never looked at it as gamifying it, but when you ask that question, that's, I guess that's a way that I've gamified things.
That's, I love that. Right. So, the main takeaway that I got for like the simple, like, okay, what did you do to gamify it? I would say, you know, goals are one of these things that, right, if you just say, okay, I want to be that eventually, like, but you don't break it down into smaller, more manageable chunks to the point where it almost doesn't feel like you're, you know, it's a challenge. You're just like, oh yeah, I can do this week. And okay. But if you're breaking it down to, if I do this week, then that leads to this goal that I want to do at the end of the month and the end of the year. And that's how you keep taking one step after another and making that progress, building that momentum. So you're essentially gamifying you're tricking your brain into being like, oh yeah, we can do this. Yeah. This is manageable.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So
make it feel more manageable.
I love that. Well, dude, Matt, thank you so much for being on the show. This was awesome. And keep doing what you're doing. I'm going to get some of that hot chocolate, and I'm going to check out some of your other products. I'm looking forward to it. And let's keep in touch, man. Good chatting with you.
Yeah. Thank you. This was great. Appreciated it.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Take care, guys.
That's it for the 5 Core Life. If you haven't already, go ahead and hit that like button on this video and pound that subscribe button so you get notified when new episodes drop. Also, please fill out the free 5 Core Life Evaluator quiz. It's a great way to get a baseline of where you are in the 5 cores and which of the 5 cores you need support. In addition, you'll get some actionable advice that you can apply and start improving your life in the areas that you need it most. That's it for today's episode of the 5 Core Life Podcast. Have a wonderful day.
Get moving. Gain momentum. Join the movement. Join Emmett by going to moremomentum.com to take a free life